Please join me in Genesis chapter 21, and we're going to roll it back to verse number 8 to get our context very clear in our heads. This event is all about the birth of Yitzhak and how he alone is raised in the tent city of Abraham as the heir of not just simply the personal property of Abraham, but of the blessing of Abraham. You remember that Abraham had an older son, Ishmael, born by the surrogate woman Hagar, and that this boy had been raised into his teen years as the heir apparent of Abraham. But God had been telling him in the background already that Ishmael was not going to be the heir of the promise. He was not going to be the one that the seed promise was going to happen through. That instead, it would happen through a physical son of Sarah and himself. And so Yitzhak comes along in the year 2076 BC for our particular purposes. And a couple of years later, I believe probably on the third birthday, he is old enough to be weaned, which is basically a transition moment from babyhood to young training childhood. So Genesis 21:8 says, the child Yitzhak grew, was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Yitzhak was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing or making fun of Yitzhak. And I took you over to Galatians chapter 4, where Paul makes it pretty clear by the power of the Holy Spirit that Ishmael was mocking the name of Yitzhak and making fun of the idea that he would be the heir. And so when Sarah saw that, everything changed for her. She became quite adamant that only Yitzhak, her physical son, was going to be the heir of the encampment. So verse 10 of Genesis 21, she came and said to Abraham, cast out this slave woman. Notice the emphasis on her status, even though she was the surrogate mother for Sarah and became a secondary wife to Abraham. She is still focused on as someone who had come as a servant into the household. So get rid of her. Cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my son, Yitzhak. Now this thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. I mean, this is hard on him. He doesn't like the idea of having to send his teenage boy away and the mother of his teenage son, whom he's no doubt developed some sort of relationship with, even though they probably have not continued with any type of sexual interaction after she became pregnant years earlier, because she was there specifically for surrogacy. That was her, for lack of a better term, job. But he has spent 13, 14, 15 years knowing her as the mother of his physical son, Ishmael. And so he is trying to deal with this big blow-up in his family, and God has a chat with him. Probably because Abraham was chatting with God, probably talking to God, begging God for guidance and resolution. God said to Abraham, "Be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for through Isaac shall your offspring, your seed, be named." And then the thing we ended on last time is God makes Abraham a promise. Now, he has already made this promise to Hagar, and no doubt by extension to Abraham in the past, but it needs to be re-emphasized here. "I will make a nation, an ethnic group, a distinct people group of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your seed. He is your offspring." So the blessing of Abraham will flow into Ishmael. Not the blessing of the seed, but the blessing of Abraham nonetheless. And he will become a great and prosperous nation known as the Ishmaelites. Now, they'll have a time when they become a bit of a problem, but they will begin, it appears, with a proper relationship with the one true God. So Abraham rose early in the morning, and he took bread and a skin of water, and he gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. Now, when I was a kid and I read this story, I always pictured Ishmael as a little bitty kid himself, but that is impossible. We know that he was, I think, 13 years old when he was circumcised shortly before Yitzhak's conception. And then it's been a couple of years since Yitzhak's birth, which puts Ishmael at age 15 or 16. So you should picture him as a teenage boy, somebody that has either gone through puberty or is in the midst of it at this time. And so he is not a helpless little bitty baby. And so they leave together. Now, where are they going? That is not indicated here as to where they were heading. But I have a suspicion, and I want to share it with you. I think that Hagar is quite upset about this sudden reversal in her fortune. I mean, as far as she knew, she was going to be a long-term member of this family, and that her son was going to grow up and be, at first, she thought, the heir of the encampment, but now that the new baby boy was born, I'm sure she understood that Ishmael was going to take a secondary role in the encampment, but would still be someone special. But that changed suddenly. And now she's being told that Sarah won't have her in the encampment anymore, or her son. They have to leave. So where are they going to go? Well, it says that she departed, and she wandered into the wilderness of Beersheba. Now, Beersheba doesn't exist as a name yet. That's for the use of the Israelis reading this story themselves for the very first time. And so they know where the city of Beersheba is located. So she is heading in that general direction. And there is another place down in that area that we have already heard about. And that was Beer Lahairoi. Remember the story of when Hagar got pregnant. And she got kind of full of herself. And Sarah reacted, overreacted to Hagar's bad attitude and started treating her kind of rough. And so Hagar, pregnant Hagar, took off, apparently heading back to Egypt. And she got to a place where she was in trouble. And so she cries out to God. And God hears her. And God speaks to her through an angel and basically tells her, you need to go home. You need to go back to Sarah, and you need to behave yourself and not be such a snot about the fact that you're pregnant and she can't get pregnant. It was at that time that God made his first prophecies about the baby boy being someone special. And in that context, we were told that the name that she gave was Beer Lahairoi, to this place that God brought water up for her. And the literal meaning of that was well of the living one who sees me. So it was at that point, I think, that Hagar became a worshiper, a follower of the true and living God. And she referred to him as the living God who sees me. I think she came looking for him. Back in this time, a lot of people had this concept that God was localized. And so I think she's heading back to the place where she first met God to try to have a chat with him about this situation. But unfortunately, she got lost. In verse 15, when the water in the skin was gone. Now, this is like an animal skin that has been prepped to hold liquid. And so it's probably a pretty good size skin that Abraham provided them with to make it to wherever they were heading. And it ran out. Now they're definitely in trouble. So she put the child, this is Ishmael, remember, 15, 16 years of age, under one of the bushes. He's a mess. And here's the reason I think he's in trouble. I think as they wandered around out there trying to find this place that only mom knows where it's at, I think he's making sure that she stays hydrated by not drinking water from the water bag himself. And so he is totally dehydrated and ready to pass out. That's, I think, what's going on here. And she is at a loss as to what to do about this, because he is now probably unconscious. He's got really bad dehydration symptoms. And so she puts him under one of these bushes, probably as a means of getting him into some shade. And she begins to despair about her situation completely. So it says she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, about a distance of a bow shot, so roughly 50, 60, 75 yards, something like that. And then she starts talking to God about death. She says, let me not look on the death of the child. Don't make me watch him die. Now, I got a little catch in my throat right now. Because when I study and when I preach and when I teach, I try to get into the situation myself and imagine what it was like to be there. Think about this, folks, especially you ladies. I don't think you'll have a problem with this. Think about being out in the middle of a desert and the canteen is dry. You're still relatively okay because you're the one that's been drinking the water. You didn't realize your kid, your son, your teenager has been making you drink it all while they didn't drink a thing. And now they are exhausted. They are maybe a little delirious, and you've got him under the shade of a bush, and you're realizing this is a mess. We're going to die out here, and I'm going to see my kid die first. Of course you'd pray. And so here she is praying, let me not look on the death of the child. And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and she wept. And then a miracle happens. God heard the voice of the boy. Apparently he's praying too. No surprise there, shouldn't be. He's been raised by his dad, Abraham, and his adoptive mom, Sarah, to believe in the one true God. And his mom has apparently raised him to believe in the living one who sees. And so he's been, in his delirium perhaps, crying out to God as well. Now remember, his name, Yishmael, literally means God hears. And so we've got a lot of playing on names happening in this context here. So God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven. Now, is this the same angel that had been there 16 or so years earlier? Maybe. And the angel says to her, what troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. So, Hagar, have some faith. Don't be afraid. God hears. Yishmael, God hears. Up, lift up the boy. Hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation. This is another aspect of challenging her to trust God. Hadn't God told her, back when she was first down in this region, that he was going to grow up and become a great nation, and many nations, many people groups would come from him? Hadn't God made her that promise? So how could he die out here, 16 years of age, no kids? It can't happen. And God keep his promise. So God is challenging her to remember his promises to her and to him and to trust him. And then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. So here we are again, God providing water miraculously to this lady out in the middle of nowhere. Because as she names him, he is a God who sees her. He sees her. He sees her situation. And he's providing for her. He loves her. He loves Ishmael. And he has something in mind for them. They were not ever going to be abandoned, no matter how much it felt like that. And so God opened her eyes. She saw a well of water. She went, filled the skin with water, and gave the boy a drink. And so now, they're okay. Now they're able to get back to finding that new place to live and trusting God to provide in that new life. And so God was with the boy, and he grew up. Now we're fast forwarding on his story now. He lived in the wilderness where they're at, which is down south of where Beersheba is going to eventually be located, somewhere not too far apparently from Beer Lahairoi, where she was when he first was inside of her. It says he lived in this wilderness and he became an expert with the bow. So he becomes famous for being able to shoot. And so he lived in the wilderness of Paran. And so this is how we know the region. It stretches southward from the southwest corner of the Dead Sea all the way down to Kadesh Barnea, which is about halfway down between the Dead Sea and the Gulf of Aqaba. And so that's southeast of Beersheba and probably where Beer Lahairoi is. It's very desolate. It's very rugged, but it has oases in it here and there. And if you know how to live in such a place, it can be quite pleasant and secure. And so that's where he grows up. And by the way, that becomes the center of the Ishmaelite people group that grow up out of him. And they come from Egyptian stock as well, because remember, mom's probably Egyptian. It says his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. So the Ishmaelites are, if you want to kind of pin it down, about a quarter of Abraham and three quarters of Egypt. This is how everything sets up for later stories of the Ishmaelites. Now, I want you to keep in mind before we depart from this story that even though Sarah's anger over Ishmael's own frustration probably kind of blew all this up, we will know later that it is Ishmael and Yitzhak together who will bury Abraham. So they will have some sort of relationship as half-brothers and show respect and honor toward dad when they bury him 75 years after Isaac has been born. So both of the boys will be in, most of the way toward their century mark by the time that dad passes away. And so there's a lot of the story of Ishmael that does not get told. And I anticipate meeting him in eternity and letting him fill me in and fill you guys in with the rest of his life, living for the God who heard him and for the God who lived and saw him and his mom when they needed him the most. Well, with that finished, let's go ahead and set the story up for the establishment of the actual community of Beersheba. So at that time, so meaning right around the time of the big blow-up with the departure of Ishmael and his mom Hagar out of the community, at that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham. Now, remember, this is the guy, Abimelech, that had tried to take Sarah as his wife and then had that big problem. Phicol seems to be his second, the right-hand man. He's in charge of the whatever the military force is for this community. Now, don't think lots and lots and lots of people. The towns of this era, probably several hundreds of people that Abimelech is over. And so Phicol, whose name, by the way, seems to be more of a title. It's got something to do with a big mouth or a big sound. They come to Abraham, where he's settled on the upper portion of one of the drainage streams, one of the wadis that pass by Gerar, the city. So they come to him there, and they say to him, God is with you in all that you do. So they are acknowledging the reality of what we call the Abrahamic blessing. Verse 23, now therefore, swear to me here, right here, where I'm meeting you, by God, that you will not deal falsely with me or with my descendants or with my posterity, but as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned. So effectively, Abimelech of Gerar, which is closer to the Mediterranean shoreline, has come up into the hills, upstream, if you will, to where Abraham has his operations spread out. And he says, I know that you are being blessed by God. And I know that people that deal well with you are blessed by God as well. I want to be in that group. And I want my following seed to be in that group. So let's enter into a mutual assistance treaty, a mutual assistance pact, that you will always treat my descendants well, and my descendants will always treat your descendants well. Let's enter into a treaty. And Abraham said, I will swear that. And so what happens next, which we will talk about next episode, is how the city of Beersheba gets its name. And it's kind of a double meaning sort of assignment. So mark your place, come back next time into God's Word.